What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hey guys, it's Hallie.
And Allison.
And welcome back to Ruined, the podcast where we ruin a horror movie for you.
And we're happy you're here. We're still here.
Yeah.
We're going to kick it off with another question because you guys keep sending us amazing questions that we love to answer. And I truly love this one from Alyssa on Instagram who said, I listen to you all when I'm exercising, which I think in general is a great, like, nothing would make me want to run faster than listening to the plots of some
of these movies.
That's
a really good point. It
and thinking like about running away.
I was thinking, like, if Peloton had actual shows, you could do, like, a horror TV series.
Oh,
where, like,
yes.
Where, like, you keep ending up in, or, like, that mirror that you exercise in.
Oh,
that, like,
yes.
Black Mirror situation. Like, you keep ending up in situations where you have to run for your life. That could be really fun.
I mean, somebody's got to do it.
Trademark. We're going to make that. Don't. So
yeah, we're
going to
make
idea.
That. We're going to expand into exercise content.
Yeah.
So you listen when you're exercising. Great. Don't hold that against you. We won't. We love it. What would go on your dream charcuterie board and which ruined baddie would assemble it? Which I think is a fun question. I mean, I feel like we've mentioned him recently, but to me, he's like, he's our most elegant villain. And I think that Candyman, because like he's got the bees. So it's like, I love getting like a little bit of like honey or spicy honey on cheese and a cracker or a piece of bread or whatever. So like,
that sounds
good. I think that he'd be like good for that, but also like, you know, the rich furs and the elegant kind of nature of Candyman. I feel like he would really know his way around like the luxury meat and cheese section of a store. So
absolutely.
I would say, I want like some of the honey, some of the spicy honey, and then like, you know, all of the, I feel like he would pick out like really good, like lush grapes.
Ooh, yes.
I like a lot of grapes around.
That sounds delicious.
Meat and cheese. Hallie?
My first thought is the family from Ready or Not, just because again, like you said, they, you know, they're rich.
Yes.
I feel like they know their cheeses. They know a charcuterie board. They've been, that's how they grew up. That's how they live.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want them to provide it, but then I was trying to think, for some reason, the idea of Bagul from, Sinister, preparing it, it seems fun to me because it's a ghoul.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has other priorities, but it's like, you got to take a break from kidnapping children and transcending the bounds of reality to have a hobby. And I think for him, if he had a hobby that was preparing charcuterie boards, I think it would really maybe help him take an edge off of his life goals, which are, of course, kidnapping children and taking them to his hell dimension.
Afterlife.
But great question.
I also
Thank
do
so
think
much.
That the leprechaun might be a fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I bet he throws a mean party.
Oh, but once you get a couple beers, he must be so annoying. Like, we saw him when he was stone cold sober.
Yeah,
imagine him after a couple beers. You know what I mean?
He's going to be a fucking nightmare. But I bet he would have a cool spread. There'd be like weird. You'd have like Lucky Charms on a board. So,
ooh, but a sharp Irish cheddar. Oh, a lot of delicious meats.
Okay.
Breads.
Okay. Yes.
I think I would love to have that as a charcuterie
board.
Low-key,
a great charcuterie country.
He definitely would be the friend that you're like, I can't stand him, but he does throw great parties, so we're going to go for a little while.
Yeah, it's like that cokehead that everybody knows when they're 26, and you're like, we got to go to his loft, but I don't want to talk to him.
Like, he is going to get us into this party, so.
Yes. So we got to go.
And then one of us ends up having to fuck the leprechaun. I'm sorry.
Well,
if we're tracking this is what happens.
Yes, that's what happens. Yeah, that's what happens in reality if he's the party goer that we assume that he is, and we know that he is.
What happened to you last night? Did you sleep with the leprechaun?
I don't know. He left his shoes outside of my apartment.
Well, there you go. I'll have to come back for them.
Love that question.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. And you can Instagram DM us questions at Ruin Podcast. And you can also email them at ruined@theradiopoint.com.
We are continuing this month's theme, which is back to school.
Back to ghoul.
Back to ghoul. Hope you
get your ghoul books and ride the ghoul bus to ghoul.
Oh, Lord.
I won't be able to stop all month.
There's no ghouls in this week's movie. And in case you've seen this and you're wondering, how is this a back to school movie? Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of conversation about writing your thesis.
Oh, perfect.
And the movie, of course, we're doing is Midsommar, or Midsummer, depending on who you ask, by Ari Aster of Hereditary fame. And I always like to have Allison watch the trailer and get her first thoughts. Allison, what did you think of the trailer?
I didn't like it.
That sounds right.
I found it very... I think I had watched it when it first, like, hit the internet, like, before it came out. And I remember, like, seeing it and being like... I think I even, like, messaged you and was like, I'm going to need you to see this for me.
Absolutely. I remember seeing the trailer and being like, okay, well, this is buck wild.
Yes. But, like, it's so, like, it's just unsettling from start to finish without any idea of why. And when those old people hit the screen...
Yeah.
Because at first it seems like it's like, oh, it's young people in like a Scandinavian country. And yeah, it's light out at night and things are upsetting. And there's clearly some, you know, like hereditary, some trauma, inherited trauma that we're going to dig into. But like, it all seemed to kind of mix. And then like those old people dressed in all white all of a sudden are like, you can't leave. And I'm like, I don't like it.
Yes.
I didn't like it at all.
And just to define it up top, that Midsummer is actually a thing. So the movie is set in Sweden. And it's a period of time around the summer solstice. And at least in Europe, depending on where you're at, like, people will go camping. People will, like, take hallucinogens. People will, like, go to concerts. And, like, it's just sort of like a free-for-all type of thing. Yeah. I feel like as Americans, we would not be able to handle it. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
It would end up like a Woodstock 99 every summer.
Oh, God.
If we were the people trying to do something like this.
Yeah.
So it's sort of based on that. And then I have notoriously on this podcast said that I don't really care for this movie. So I'm just going to say up top that it's fine. I like it fine.
Okay.
But I will say I read more about it, and this is not an Ari Aster original. This was sort of brought to him, and then he developed it with a Swedish company. And interestingly, I thought it was interesting. They came to him like, oh, you have it set during Midsummer was the idea, and he sort of developed it from there. In Sweden, this is seen less as like a straight-up horror movie and more of like a dark comedy. So I think it's playing with a lot of ideas about Swedish culture and like our ideas about what Sweden is. And I think then I give it more credit, then it's like, okay, well, maybe this isn't necessarily for me as much. You know what I mean? Like if you're making a parody about America, I'd be able to understand all of it, you know. But for me watching this, I'm like, I don't know enough about Sweden to like get, you know,
I'm not in on the joke about what happens in Sweden and like the cultural kind of underpinnings of that society. So,
yes. Which again, is not to say I didn't like it. I'm just saying Hereditary is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I wanted to just say that up top before we get into it.
It seems like no matter what this movie was, there would be no follow-up to Hereditary. Like, it just seems like across
it's not
the board.
Fair.
Nothing is going to really ever compare and nothing is going to top it. So that's the problem of having your first big movie be that good.
Exactly. I'm excited for his third movie. It's going to come out.
Yeah.
We also take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of cultural tradition?
Very. It feels similar to religion, which I find terrifying.
Yes.
Any forced activities or like agreed upon, like, and then we all do, like anything beyond like a social contract that protects everybody. But we all do. Like, I don't like, I don't like parades. I don't like kind of large gatherings of like, oh, and we all do that. Like I mean, these are obviously not the same, but like SantaCon or like
Halloween. I don't care for that at all. I don't approve of the culture of SantaCon whatsoever.
No, nor should you. But like any of that kind of like everybody, like even like New Year's Eve to an extent, I like don't like the like forced, like, this is what we do at this time and everybody does it and like you build it up to be a thing and it's of course, never going to, you know, live up to being that thing and could go really south. So I don't like it.
Yeah. And it's you know, this the fear, especially as Americans, I feel like there's a lot of fear of like compulsory cultural involvement. Mm-hmm. Of course, unfortunately, at least here, it causes people to go completely insane, go the other way and be like, I don't believe in science. It's like, okay, well, you didn't have to go that far to the other side.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, there's definitely something about it that is very spooky. And before we get in, Allison, would you like to guess the twist?
Guess the twist.
I don't want to say that it's all in the lead character's mind, but there's something about the way that the trailer is structured that, like, what she's seeing and experiencing is not what's actually happening.
Okay, that's really fun. All right, I like that. All right, so let us begin by ruining Midsommar.
Ooh.
We begin in a beautiful, on a beautiful Swedish-looking tapestry of what you realize later are the events of the movie. And I'm not going to be describing it to you because I don't want you to know what's going to happen.
Okay, great.
But I don't know whether that means, oh, the events of the movie were foretold, or this is like the cultural understanding and record of the events we're about
to see. What happened. Okay.
So now they're part of this Swedish cultural landscape. Mm-hmm. But it's a nice touch. So we zoom in on a completely dark, snow-covered house in a suburban area, and the phone is just ringing and ringing and ringing. It's the middle of the night. We hear the answering machine pick up, and it's Danny, our protagonist, Florence Pugh. She's leaving a message being
Is this current day? Is this set?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, set in current day. She's calling, and she's like, hey, I haven't been able to get in touch with you. I got an upsetting email from my sister who lives with her parents. Please, one of you call me back. Like, I'm starting to really freak out. And obviously, they don't say exactly where we're at, but, like, she's clearly out of state at school. So it's not like she could, like, easily, you know, check in on them.
Right.
And she got this really concerning email, and we see the email, which says, and it is concerning, it says, I can't anymore. Everything is black. Mom and dad are coming to goodbye. Now, I think at this point, you got to just call the cops. If you get an email like this, you know. However,
yeah, you can't just call home and be like, someone answer.
Yeah. However, this has happened so many times. And also, we're about to meet Christian, Danny's boyfriend, who has downplayed this so many times that I think Danny, she mistrusts her instincts immediately. Mm-hmm. So she calls her boyfriend, who's out on the town with the boys. And he's like, she's like, I'm really worried about this email. He's like, how many times has your sister done this? It's a cry for attention. And Danny says, well, she's bipolar. You know, like, it is concerning. Yes, it's a cry for attention. But also, I'd like to give the attention to this, you know. Who knows? And Christian basically is just sort of like, you always do this. You always freak out. Like, it's not a big deal. He's incredibly mean to her from the jump. And she says, would you mind coming over later? And he says, did we make plans for later? And it's like, but bitch, don't call me anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if something has happened to my family and you're like, oh, do we make plans? It's like, no, I'm calling you because something is wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And he basically calms her down, you know, and you have to get her off the phone. Obviously, she's still extremely upset. And then we see Danny on the phone with a female friend being like, I know I'm driving him away. All my family stuff. He seems so checked out. I know he's just waiting to break up with me. And the friend's like, you've done nothing wrong. You have family, like, everyone has family stuff. Like, your partner's supposed to support you. And Danny's like, no, it's too much. It's, you know, so she's already, like, taking on this. She's blaming herself for all of this.
Okay.
Even though we now see, we check in with Christian. And he's sitting with his boys, Josh, Mark, and Pele. And Christian is like, oh, my God. Like, he's been trying to break up with Danny for a year. But he feels like he cannot break up with her because of her ongoing family stuff with her sister.
Okay.
However, his friends are like, you just fucking break up with her. You know, like, will you want to talk about this forever? You know, like, this has been
a year.
There's
never going to be a right time with, like, ongoing stuff. So it's better to just get out.
Yeah. But also, then, like, that implies that, like, so they've been going out, as you later find out, like, 4 years. So for the past year, he's been wanting to break up with her. If we've been dating 4 years and you say to me, did we make plans? I will break up with you on the spot.
I'll break up with you.
I shouldn't have to make plans. You could just say, oh, sorry, I'll see you tomorrow, or I'll call you when I get home or whatever. Right. Would you be big plans? A bitch.
Yeah, we're not still about? Like, Friday we go out here. I'll call you to see, like, what you want to do, what movie you want to see. Like, that's not how it's going to be if we're 4 years into a relationship.
And obviously, this is a huge red flag that anyone in a normal circumstance would be able to see. But Danny, because she's so vulnerable and so distraught and, like, you know, her family stuff is just so overwhelming that she just cannot handle the idea, I think, of breaking up with him. Mm-hmm. She's just like, she needs some support because her family cannot offer her that to her. And Josh says, you know, do you think, like, you're focusing on your relationship and like all this turmoil around it because you don't want to actually focus on your studies because you haven't picked a thesis yet. And apparently all of these guys work in the anthro department of this school. And Christian's like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not it. But obviously he's, I don't know how old these guys are supposed to be. They're all like 35 to me. So he's clearly
Everyone seemed way too old for college in that trailer.
Well, I think we're supposed to be like, oh, they're getting their doctorate. So like they're older, but still like you got to have something picked out is my understanding. If like to arrive at this point and have no idea what your thesis is going to be seems a little like Christian, you know,
that's a mess.
And a waitress comes to pick up their tab and Mark says, you know, you could be getting that girl pregnant right now. And Pele says, and don't forget about all the hot Swedish women we're going to meet when you guys come with me on that trip we planned. So we know they are headed to Sweden with Pele, who's Swedish, to visit his hometown. Just then, Christian's phone blows up again and it's Danny. They're like, oh my God. Like, Mark's like, this is abuse. Like, her calling this much is abuse. And Christian's like, no, I'll just answer it. He answers it and we just hear Danny screaming.
Hey. Danny. Babe.
It's horrible. And then we see what has caused her to cry. We see firefighters arriving at her parents' house. And they go in through the garage. And we see both cars are running with the garage door closed.
Oh.
And there are two hoses that are connected to the exhaust pipes.
Right.
And they follow the hoses into the house. And one of the hoses goes
into the house.
One of the hoses goes under the parents' door. And then it's duct taped together. So what we are to understand is that the parents went to sleep and then the sister put the hose underneath the door and duct taped it. So they died in their sleep. So from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Unfortunately,
we then follow the other hose where we find it is attached to Danny's sister and it is duct taped to her mouth.
But she has
like vomited out of her nose around it. So she's covered in vomit. This hose is duct taped to her mouth. And one of her eyes is like full of blood. And then on behind her, we see her laptop and all of Danny's emails that have gone unresponded to.
Mm-hmm.
And so Christian goes over to Danny. And even from the street, he's like walking up to her house and it's snowing. And he could hear her screaming from inside the apartment because obviously she's devastated.
That's, I mean, truly horrific.
Yeah.
Truly horrific.
And he's holding her all night and she's screaming as the snow comes down. And obviously, you know, he's thinking, well, I can't break up with her now.
Yeah, and this is at least another 6 months.
So 6 months later, it's summertime, it's sunny out, and Danny is still, like, she's in bed all day. Obviously, like, she's incredibly, you know, she's practically catatonic.
How do you ever come back from that?
And so Christian says, hey, I'm just going to go to this party for, like, 45 minutes, I'll come back. And she's like, no, no, I want to go. Christian obviously doesn't want her to come, but she insists on going. Then at the party, she finds out that Christian is planning to go to Hälsingland, Sweden, with Josh, Mark, and Pele. Pele's there, and he says, there's like a 9-day festival for midsummer. There's like pageantry and like we play these games like Skin the Fool and we have like costumes and it's like incredible. And also we take hallucinogens and like just like party. However, Christian has not told Danny this. So Danny is pissed when they get home and is like, okay, so were you going to tell me you were going? He's going in 2 weeks.
Hey.
And he goes, I hate to use the word gaslighting because people use it so much, but he gaslights her.
But he's gaslighting her.
He's like, I told you I wanted to go and I just decided today I wanted to go. And she goes, but you already have a ticket, right? And he goes, oh, well, yeah, like obviously.
She needs to dump his ass.
So Christian's like, I'm sorry, like it's not a big deal, but you should go home if you're going to attack me like this. And Danny immediately backs off because again, she's afraid of being alone. She needs somebody. And Christian, even though he sucks, and is trying to, he seems like he's trying to force her to break up with him. He should know that's not going to happen, especially now.
No, she's not going to do that.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
And so he backs off. He's like, okay, he's like, that's great. You're going, are you going to use it for your thesis? And he goes, I don't know what my thesis is, you know, and acts like all weird about it. And the next day, all the guys live together. They're like studying and they're planning their trip or whatever. And Danny stops by. And when Christian buzzes her up, he turns to the other guys and says, just so you know, I invited Danny to Sweden, not to make it weird, but also, I'm sure she won't come, but also pretend that you know that I invited her and you all know she's coming. And also she did accept. And the other guys are like, what's going on? And so Danny comes in and is like, hey guys, sorry, I guess I'm coming to Sweden, you know. And Mark, who's a jerk, is like, Christian, can I speak to you in the other room about the paragraph that I'm working on? And Josh is also kind of shut down. And, like, he tolerates Danny, but he's not nice to her. But Pele is, like, extremely warm and, like, talks to her. And we find out that Danny is studying psychology. And the guys were in the anthro department. And he's like, how's that going? And I do think it's interesting in both Hereditary and Midsommar, one of the main characters is studies psychology, or in Hereditary is a psychologist.
Yeah.
But is not able to look at their own, themselves or their family situation in a way that, which, I mean, that's true a lot of things, you know.
Yeah,
it's like,
I can
if you're
see
a doctor,
that.
You can't necessarily treat yourself, you know.
Right.
But I thought that was like, boy, girl, if you were a little more aware of this, you would not, none of this would have happened.
Yeah, you could have avoided a lot more trauma, probably.
Yeah. So Pele shows her photos on his phone. The village is basically a commune, which I think is like a kibbutz. So sort of like, you know, all the kids are raised communally. Like, they all farm and, like, work together and sort of, like, live in these, like, big sort of, like, dorm barns all together. And he shows these photos, and these photos from the last festival where, like, everyone has these beautiful ornate headdresses. So I guess they have this festival every year, but only every 90 years it's, like, the special one. So it's, like, the 90-year festival. You know, it's like this incredibly important time for the festival. It's going to be like even more impressive. And she's like, well, that does sound kind of cool. So she's like getting excited or whatever. And then Pele tells her, like, I'm really sorry about your family. And this is the first time any of them have like acknowledged it to her, you know.
Okay.
And he tells her, like, I've lost my parents as a child. And Danny just breaks down and goes into the bathroom. But when she goes into the bathroom to sob, she's now in the airplane bathroom on her way to Sweden with the guys.
Okay.
Still choking down sobs. It's at least like 6 months later. She shouldn't be traveling. I just feel like taking a trip with also like a bunch of people who don't really want you there.
An international trip to like a thing. Like, that's not.
We're like, you're going to be taking hallucinogens and like being with a bunch of strangers. Like,
yeah, that is not. No, that is. Yeah. It is too soon, as they would say.
So they land and they take, and Helsingland is a 4-hour drive from Stockholm. So they drive up there and they get to a big open field where all the other people who have like, they're out, you know, like studying college, they've come back and they've brought like their friends with them. And Pele is greeted by his brother Ingmar, who brought his friends from school in Britain, Simone and Connie. And they're all hanging out and it's like sunny and gorgeous. And they decide they're going to take magic mushrooms. And Danny's like, I just don't know. I need to get my bearings. Like, we just got here. Like, I need a minute, you know. And of course, all the guys basically are like, well, if we take them like at different times, like the trip will be different. And then like, we'll have to deal with you. You know, like immediately Gil turns. She's like, it's fine. I'll drink the mushroom tea. And they trip for hours, like in the middle of the day. And at a certain point, it's brilliant sun. And Mark says, you know, what time is it? And it's 9 p.m. and the sky looks like it's noon.
So upsetting.
And Pele says, it's normal. It's the midnight sun. And Mark's like, I don't know if I can handle this. And you know, he's sort of guiding them through this trip. Like, can you feel that the energy is coming out of the earth? And like, she looks down, there's grass sprouting out of her hand. And she's hallucinating, but she also like sees the tree breathing and it's actually like very peaceful.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Mark then just says, you guys are like my family. And the mention of family, she just panics.
Instant trigger for her, I'm sure.
Yeah. Gets up and she runs off to the outhouse and she gets in there and it's dark inside and she has to like light a candle and she sees her sister with the carbon monoxide hose in her mouth in the mirror behind her. And she whips around, but of course it's just a hallucination.
Yeah.
And she runs into the forest and falls asleep. And she has a dream of her sister sitting on the couch next to her parents, dead. And when Danny wakes up, she finds out she's been out for hours. They all slept like on bedrolls in the field. Like, they all came and got her. And now they have to keep walking to Pele's village with all the other, like, returning villagers and their guests. So there's still, like, hours of walking in front of them. And they arrive in the village finally, and it's, like, this very beautiful, like, sun-shaped, like, wooden archway that they walk in. Mm-hmm. And all of the villagers wear, like, these white tunics.
Yes.
And Pele starts introducing them around. Mark says, oh, so we're stopping in Waco before going to Pele's village, which I did think was kind of funny.
That's funny. And also, like, I mean, as soon as you said, like, they're all in white tunics, I was like, this feels like a cult.
Yes, absolutely. It's immediately obvious it's a cult. And they're all given, like, berries on a straw, and they meet Father Odd, who's, like, one of the elders. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, the white frocks are a tribute to nature's hermaphrodism. So, you know, the men and the women both wear, like, a long frock to celebrate, you know, like, the masculine, feminine, male, female nature of the cycle of nature. And they're like, okay, sure. And there's like a band playing and a lot of weird Swedish singing. And there's like a big structure covered in flowers. It's like, looks like a cross. I think you saw the trailer, a cross.
Yeah.
With two circles underneath the arms of it. And like little sort of garlands running from the arms up to the top. And that's sort of the central point. And then there's like a big dorm barn that they all sleep in. And then like a meeting house and like a cooking house and all sorts of like little interestingly made buildings. And Siv, this town elder woman, welcomes everyone and gives everyone like a drink, and they all toast. So like, it's been 90 years since the last like special Midsummer. And she brings out two elderly villagers and gives them a torch, and they're sort of celebrating these two elderly villagers, but none of the Americans could speak Swedish, so they don't really know what's going on.
Right.
And we see Siv scream to this man, this woman, these elderly people, spirits back to the dead. We also see some other stuff, like a severely disabled villager painting, and a young woman with red hair, who we later find out her name was, I think it's Mara, getting dressed for the festivities. And she immediately has eyes for Josh. Like, as soon as she sees Josh, she's like, okay, I'm gonna figure this out.
Yep.
So all the villagers are dancing and sort of, you know, frolicking. And the Americans just immediately sit down and keep drinking, as we are wont to do.
I mean, that sounds like the most realistic depiction of what would happen.
Yeah. And we find out that Christian has forgot Danny's birthday, which is today. And not only that, he... sort of like the redheaded woman we've just seen kind of kicks him flirtatiously as she dances by. And so he gets up and he joins the dance with her. So already, you know, he's sort of like, I'm interested in this redheaded woman that I haven't even met because I don't know her name and I haven't spoken to her yet.
Right.
And Connie asks Christian and Danny about their relationship. And Christian's like, oh, yeah, we've been together like 3.5 years. And Danny's like, it's been over 4 years. You don't even know the basics about our relationship.
Right.
And we see in the distance there is a sacred yellow temple that looks like a triangle that no one is allowed into.
Okay.
There is also a bear in a cage, a live bear.
Nope, that I don't like that.
It's it obviously will come back into play later.
Yes, of course.
And a tapestry about how to make a man fall in love with you, which Christian should have read because, let me tell you, somebody is going to be using the spell on him.
Yes.
So you put flowers under your pillow. You put like a rune under their bed. Then you clip your pubes and put them in his food.
His food?
Along with your menstrual blood. And then the last thing is like, dot, 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 question mark, question mark, question mark, pregnant and in love and marrying this man.
I mean.
So, okay, menstrual blood's bad enough, but pubes, they're going to notice, right? Like menstrual blood, okay, you cook it in something, maybe they won't taste it, but you can't just put pubes in someone's food.
I think that both are super noticeable.
Yes, that's fair. And we as the viewer notice when they come into play.
Oh, no. But yeah, you would notice.
Yeah.
Both of those things. So like, are you supposed to be able to trick them? Or are you like force feeding them?
Unclear. But
I don't like it.
It's going to be obvious when it actually happens. So they put them in this big dorm barn area where like all of the young people sleep. I think it's like anyone younger than 36. And we find out that they view life in terms of like 18-year segments. So like, birth to 18, you're a child. 18 to 36, you're like a worker and you start having your family. 36 to 54, you're a laborer. 54 to 72, or what is it? Yeah. You are like a mentor, like a town elder. And Danny says, well, what happens when you're 72? And Pele jokingly makes like a slash across his throat, like, ugh, you die motion.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, which is funny because it turns out it's not a joke. There was a funny moment where somebody comes to like get them and was like, oh, we're watching a movie tonight. If you want to come join us, it's Austin Powers, which is like a fun reminder that even though it looks like it's the 1800s, like it's modern day and they're just like putting out a movie for like the kids to watch or whatever. And Mark is immediately interested in this woman who comes to announce a woman named Inga. And he's like, oh, I want to give her a bath. Like Mark sucks. Mark's like the most like objectifying person in the movie. Meanwhile, Danny sees like a wall of like May Queens. So like all of these are May Queens. And I'm going to say it. That's from Wicker Man. I think that's part of the thing about this movie. It's like a lot of these scenes, like, that's from Wicker Man, baby.
It feels like Wicker Man watching the trailer.
Yeah. Like, and again, not that I don't think you like ripped it off or anything. And I think May Queens are a real thing. But a part of you is like, well, we kind of have seen this play out. Yeah. Luckily, Pele tells Christian, hey, you forgot Danny's birthday. So he gets her like a slice of bundt cake and he tries to apologize. But of course, she's sort of like over, like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Like, it's whatever. Right. Pele tells them tomorrow is the Etisepa. And Josh knows what that is. Josh is also like completely nutting as an anthropologist, like about this. Like, oh my God.
So
like,
much stuff.
I'm going to cover this in my thesis, blah, blah. Because he's doing like Midsummer in all these different countries. And he's like, this is like, there's nothing like this. Well, actually, no. He says like, I see the similarities, but this is so much more, you know? And he refused to tell Christian what it is because they're like rivals, sort of. And Christian tries to look it up, but of course they have no signal and there's no Wi-Fi, of course.
I mean, I would imagine, of course, there are no phones to be used.
And so they end up, they go to sleep, and that night Danny is waken up by the baby, and she sees an illustration on the wall, and it's like someone happily cutting open their arm.
No.
Which is, you hate to see it. Again, a lot of things here were like, you're like, you would leave. You would leave. You would get out of there. You would.
There are a few things as disturbing as like the imagery or actual like experience of seeing somebody harming themselves or someone else while happy.
Yes.
Like that's one of the most disturbing like combos in
yes
cinematic or literary history.
Agreed. In the morning, everyone goes to breakfast and we see the two older people from the day before, a man and a woman. They're sort of wearing different like blue sort of tunics and they take their place at the head of the table. And oh, the tables, this the table budget in this movie alone, tables upon tables, different configurations. It reminds me of, did you watch I Think You Should Leave?
Yes. Tables.
Tables, yeah. Patty Harrison's character, so, her so, job so, is tables.
So, so
somebody's
funny.
Job on this movie was tables.
Was like,
that's
tables.
How many tables there were.
Yeah.
And now
was somebody getting the tables dirty?
A lot of stuff was happening on those tables. A lot of changing, a lot of like different like place settings.
Mm-hmm.
So the people are there and everyone's sort of solemnly like having this last breakfast with them. And they get up and they both start singing this sort of like toneless, like chanting Swedish, mm-hmm. you know, sort of ritualistic yeah. stuff. And then they all pack up and they head to the cliffs, which brings me to the question, Allison, what is Atestupa? Atestupa? Atestupa. Atestupa, I'll say that. What do you think all it right. is?
I mean, I got to believe that it's killing 72-year-olds by pushing them off a cliff, just based on the information I have.
Well, according to Wikipedia, the name supposedly denotes sites where ritual genocide, which of course is the killing of elderly people, took place during Nordic prehistoric times, whereby elderly people threw themselves or were thrown to their deaths. According to legend, this was done when old people were unable to support themselves or to assist in a household.
Ugh.
Interestingly speaking, because again, not to go immediately compare this back to Wicker Man, except I will because it's very comparable.
It's hard not to.
Much like the Wicker Man in Wicker Man, people sort of took this as like, this is real. And then it wasn't really until later people were like, this probably wasn't real. Like, it was, yeah. like, described in literature, but it's, like, saying, like,
it's mythology. Read
a, yeah, like, as if, like, we read things from the past as if they're all, as if they didn't, fiction didn't exist.
Right.
Or, like, fairy tales or something. So
right.
I think
that everything
saying,
was just a documented, like, yes. transcription of life. And that's not true.
Yeah, so I guess Swedish linguist Adolf Noren started questioning the myth at the end of the 19th century, and it's now generally accepted among researchers that the practice of suicide precipices, it didn't exist. Like, it okay. was in, like, sagas and poems, but it was more like, you know what I mean? It was a metaphor.
Yeah.
Much like the Wicker Man. Mm. Unfortunately, in the movie, that is not the case. They head to the cliffs, and none of the foreigners know what's going on. All the villagers know what they're going for. But none of the Americans or the British people do that are there.
Okay.
So they show up, and the two elderly people are carried on chairs to the top. And Josh sees Siv holding up their holy book, which is called the Ruby Rar. And he asks, can I read it? And Pelle's like, it's like literally like an eldritch, like runic language.
Yeah.
You couldn't read it.
No,
it's an elder. The name of the rune alphabet is called the Elder Futhark. And he's like, you can't sure. read it, you know? So the elderly woman gets to the top of the cliff first. She has her palms cut open. She smears them on a runestone. She walks to the end of the cliff, Allison, and she jumps. And you see her body slamming into the rocks below. And then you cut to her body bouncing off the rock, and her face is just a smashed, bloody hole.
Ugh.
And Allison, my question to you now is, what would you do?
What would you do?
I would book a flight home. Yeah. I'm out of there.
I would run. Leaving. I would just be like, I'd just start running. Yeah. Because they might be able to catch me, but at least I get a little bit of distance between me and the village before they realize what's going on.
Yeah. I am out of there so fast. And I'm leaving everybody behind me. Like, I'm not like, okay, guys, let's go. Like, they're all, like, I'm like, I am gone.
Yeah.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Helix. If you're looking for better sleep, you need to upgrade your mattress with Helix. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released and high-end Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids, which Charlie has. Charlie has a Helix mattress now, just for kids, in his race car bed. Very excited, very happy about it. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and it ships straight to your door free of charge. They even offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. If you're a side sleeper, you can choose a model with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief. There are also models with more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, check out enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating while you sleep. It's no wonder Helix has over 12,000 five-star reviews. And you've loved your Helix mattress.
I got a Don Lux.
There you go.
And
there
it's
you go.
Great.
Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/crooked. That's helixsleep.com/crooked. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
So, obviously, nobody should be seeing this, but especially not Danny. And as soon Danny, enters sort of, a fugue state, she's disgusted and horrified. And all the villagers are, this is completely normal, whatever. Simon and Connie, however, the British people are, screaming, obviously, okay. See, what is going on?
That's a good indication that this is not okay.
Yes. Unfortunately, the old elderly man is still out there, and then he jumps.
Of course.
And unfortunately, Allison, when he jumps, and Simon and Connie are screaming at him to stop, he survives the fall.
No.
His legs are shattered and it's awful. And he starts moaning and screaming. So everyone in the village starts moaning and screaming along with him. And just when you're maybe they could get that guy some help, a man steps forward with a large wooden mallet and crushes the elderly man's skull. And then he gives it to a younger woman who also smashes his skull and then a young man. And they just all hit it once and then hand down the hammer. And an interesting choice, and I do think it's very spooky, is throughout this whole sequence, the volume keeps getting turned down more and more. When they are doing this, it's dead silent. And I was that's a very interesting choice that is very affecting. Because I think we're supposed to be seeing it through Danny's point of view.
Where she's longer sensory. It's just
you're so overwhelmed. Simon and Connie are fuck this. We just saw you murder an old man. We're out. And Shivra is over and she's trying to explain
those two who jumped has just reached the end of their Horga life cycle. And you need to understand it as a great joy for them.
Joy?
Yes. And when it's my turn, it would be a great joy for me.
Here's the problem with this. If you have a cultural tradition where you will not be honest and tell other people about it, that, to me, is an indication that is not
bad.
Good.
Yeah, right.
And there's plenty of this throughout all of time. It's if you were doing stuff that if you were to tell other people about it, they would be rightfully horrified.
Right. They would try and stop
you. Yeah. Because otherwise, you would have just told them, we're going to go do this. And
this is what we do.
And the fact that you would hide it from them to essentially entice them to stay longer, or alternately, just don't invite them. Be hey, we're doing something this morning. It's just for us. It's not for the foreigners. You guys stay here, have breakfast. We'll be back in an hour. Then they never have to see it. The fact that you invited them, it's this is a bad red flag.
This is bad.
Because now it's they're showing them this to normalize what's going to happen to them later, basically.
Yes.
So Danny is obviously really distraught. She goes off to scream next to the sacred temple.
Yep.
Back at the dorm, Christian finds Josh, who's frankly taking notes oh my God, this is gold. And Christian tells him—
Gold?
Well, for his anthropology thesis, oh my God, they still do this thing that people thought was a myth, but it's actually real. It is this huge find. And also again, anthropologists historically, I feel there's a lot of moments of one, this is ghoulish. And two, you're excited. You're excited that something horrible is happening in a community.
Right. You're so excited about what this does for you as a researcher and scholar that you're not paying attention to the fact that this is horrific and inhumane and should be stopped.
Exactly. And so Josh comes in, he's actually, I'm going to do my thesis on the Harga people. And Josh's that I'm doing my thesis on Midsummer. Because she's that's two different things. And also you didn't even know you want to do the Harga until today. And it's Josh, unlike Danny, Josh doesn't need to deal with Christian's bullshit. So he's fuck you. Like, you are a scab. You're like, you have no original thoughts. Like, you're just going to try to steal my idea. And Christian's like, yeah, like, if you want to collaborate, let me know, but I'm going to write about it. And it's like, I don't know what the laws are around that. Like, obviously, Josh claimed it sort of beforehand, but, like, did he? So, so now the movie is partly about them both wanting to stay to write their thesis.
Oh, God.
Which, to me, is not enough of a reason to stay.
But.
So, Josh, he wants to talk to Pelly about writing with the Hargan Pill. He initially tells him, like, no, the elders will not allow it. You know, like, you'd have to anonymize everybody. And also, Christian already asked me this, so can't do it. And Josh pleads with him, like, please just ask the elders. I really want to write about this. And he's like, okay, I'll ask. But, like, they're not going to like the idea. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah,
they're not going to let this stuff get out.
They didn't even want to mention it to the people who were participating.
Exactly. You think, like, they're going to have this,
like,
published.
As, like, outside participants. Like, of course they're not going to be like, also write about it. Publish it.
Yeah. And so Pelly finds Danny, who is frantically packing to leave, and tries to call me around. He's like, I know how you're feeling. My parents died in a fire. Danny's like, I am not upset about my parents for once.
No.
It was that guy who fucking got jumping off the cliff, like Mr. Mashed Potato Head or whatever. Like, this is not about my parents. He's like, you know, I feel like when my parents died, like, the Harger were there to embrace me, and I always really felt held by a family. And he says to Danny, do you feel held by Christian? Does he feel like home to you? So trying to, like, get in between the relationship, basically.
Yes.
Which is fair, but also, again, should have done this before.
Yes.
She just saw two people get brutally killed.
Right, yeah. Things, the waters are muddy now. Like, there's too much going on.
Exactly. So Christian goes to check in with Danny later, and she's like, are you not fucked up by this? And he's like, well, you know, it's cultural. I want to keep an open mind. I want to do my thesis on it. I bet how we put our elderly in nursing homes seems barbaric to them. And this is, I think, what the issue I have with the movie. It's like, no. Like, you have to give me another compelling reason other than we're going to stay to do our thesis. Like, at least with Wicker Man, it's like, okay, I'm trying to solve a murder or disappearance of a child. That, to me, makes sense.
That's enough to justify staying because there's a reason. This is selfish and, like, useless.
Yeah, if I'm Danny, I'm like, I don't care about your thesis. Like, it doesn't matter to me whether you think it's culture or whatever. Interestingly, Mark slept through it. And I think the reason that we didn't have Mark at the cliff is because Mark would have been like, this is fucked up. We're leaving.
Yeah.
Like, Mark has no interest in cultural anthropology of this kind, at least, like, whatsoever. So we think if he had been there, he would have.
It would have been another voice to say, let's go.
In the middle of the night, Danny wakes up and she sees Christian, Mark, and Josh all sneaking out of the barn with all their stuff. And she follows them, and they are driving away in a car without her. And Mark is, like, laughing at her in the back seat. And when she screams in the dream, car exhaust billows out of her mouth.
Ooh.
And then she gets this flash of, like, she sees the elderly couple, and then she sees her sister with the hose over her mouth lying next to Danny's parents at the bottom of the cliff. So clearly this is all getting all, you know, jumbled
mixed up. Mixed up.
Meanwhile, we see the redheaded woman puts a rune under Christian's bed, which we know is a part of the love spell.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh sees it, so he snatches the rune to talk to Pelly about it. And the next day, Pelly's like, okay, talk to the elders. You can write about the Harga, but so is Christian because he asked me first. You have to anonymize everyone and you cannot publish the village's location. And that is it. And Josh is like, that's fine. That's completely fine. He shows him the rune and he says, Pelly's like, oh, that's a love rune. And I think it's actually my sister, Maya. She's got her pants license last year, which I guess means she's 18. But basically, like, she's interested in Christian. She put that rune there, you know, just so you know. So Christian's, of course, like, well, well, well.
Who do we have here?
You don't say. Suddenly, a man runs over and it turns out, screaming at Mark, and it turns out Mark peed on a fallen dead tree that is, like, their ancestral tree. And it's this huge offense. So there's, like, a big hubbub. Meanwhile, Connie is sneaking away from the dorm to find Simon because they're both headed to the train station. Simon and Connie have, like, the right idea, which is like, we get the fuck out of here.
Out of here.
So she tells Danny, like, we're packing to leave. Just then, Father Odd shows up and says, hey, Connie, Simon just went with Jan. They went to the train station, and then Jan's going to come back and pick you up. And Connie's like, why would Simon leave without me? I could have sat on his lap. And Father Odd's like, no, I know. It'll be fine. They'll be back in a minute. And Connie's like, fuck you. And so she runs off sort of down the road to try to just get out of the village.
Yeah.
And Danny watches her, and Father Odd just says, like, okay, so lunch in a bit. So Connie and Simon are places unknown. We don't know where they are going to end up, but they are attempting
to. But they're not here anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Danny tries to go tell Christian this, like, Simon and Connie were really upset. Like, Simon left without Connie, which seems really weird. Like, something is going on reasonably. But because Christian is so used to blowing her off, he's just too obsessed with talking to the villagers for his thesis now, all of a sudden. And he says to the this villager, Valentine, he's like, so how do you, like, how do you prevent incest, basically? Like, if it's just, like, people in the town. And Valentine's like, that's a great question. The elders approve mates, but we do respect the incest taboos. So, like, a lot of times we have to get outside people, a.k.a. Christian, you know what I mean, to sort of get in here and, like, mix up the gene pool a little bit.
Just add a little bit
to the gene pool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is, I think, why we're so thinking that that's what Maya's interested in Christian. It's like, oh, great, someone who is not directly related to me.
Right.
Let's get this done, you know. Meanwhile, the women invite Danny to help cook, and she's joking with them. They're making meat tarts. And Father Odd goes to show Josh the ruby raider, the book, and we see a lot of the pages are smeared in paint. And then there's empty pages in the back. And he said, This is our holy book. It's always being added to it. It's always being, you know. And so Josh says, well, who gets to add to it? And he says, well, by Reuben, the profoundly disabled guy that we saw earlier.
Oh, good.
And Father Odd says that Reuben is unclouded by normal cognition, so it makes him open to the source. He adds to the book, which is what we saw him painting, and the elders interpret it. And so Josh says, okay, so what happens when Reuben dies? You just wait for a new baby who's quote-unquote unclouded. And Father Odd tells him, oh, no, no. Reuben is the product of inbreeding. We intentionally make profoundly, mentally, and physically disabled babies when we need an oracle. So they've sort of been engineering oracles through inbreeding for years. Again, if I'm Josh, I would be like, it is unethical for me to continue having this conversation. Yes, we got to go.
Yeah, it is just not okay.
Instead, Josh says, can I take a photograph? And Father says, absolutely not. And everyone hears a woman screaming, but nobody really goes to investigate it. We later realize it must be Connie. Something has happened to Connie. We don't see it. Okay. It happens off camera. So at supper, we see Christian has a slightly more red drink, and his meat pie has a special leaf underneath, and you better believe you know what's in that meat pie.
I mean,
pubes. It's going to be pubes.
It's like on, like, Below Deck when they're like, this is the vegan meal, and everybody else except it's the opposite because it's pubes and menstrual blood.
I haven't seen Below Deck, but the idea of someone eating just a big bowl of pubes seems right.
That's the Below Deck experience.
Yeah. Christian takes a bite of his pie, and of course, he finds his pube, and he takes the drink. He doesn't realize the drink is tainted because it's just a little bit, but it's clearly a different color. It's much pinker. Right. It looks like pink lemonade compared to everyone else's regular lemonade.
Also, like, everyone, I assume, is still, like, all dressed in white. Like, everyone looks the same, and everything looks the same. Like, you would just notice something that is slightly off when there's that much uniformity.
But I guess we're to think, like, Christian is not a person to notice anything, or like he can only focus on the things that he thinks are important. You'd think, and that's, I don't want to talk shit about this movie because I don't think it's a bad movie, but like it would be nice if Christian was a little more self-aware. Like it would give something to the character to be like, huh, that's where there's pubes in my drink, and why is my drink a different color than everyone else's? Well, none of my business.
Not paying attention.
So while they're there, Inga, who is the woman who Mark was admiring earlier, said he wanted to give her a bath. She was like, oh, come with me. I'll show you. And he's like, oh, I got to go with her. She's going to show me something. And I'm excited to see it.
Oh.
Good luck to you, Mark. No one even looks up. Like, Josh is looking at his notes, like, on his thesis. Like, nobody even acknowledges that Mark leaves.
Is any part of, like, the message or, like, point of this movie about self-involvement? Or is this just kind of like these characters are poorly drawn and not paying attention?
I think what they're trying to say is that, like, this kind of environment, which is a cult, like, it absolutely is a cult, whether or not they would acknowledge that about their own village, is that it leverages things about you that you are not necessarily aware of. So, like, for Danny, it's leveraging her trauma and her desire to be in a group and to be, like, Paley's so nice to her, and it is really compelling when he talks to her. Like, she is obviously, like, she just needs a kindness. It was Christian's, like, they're leveraging the fact that, like, he is so myopic and so self-obsessed that he isn't going to notice this stuff. And they're able to sort of read that about him. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, there's a lot of different ways to take the movie, but I think it's about the idea of how someone could join a cult without realizing it. And it's because all of us have things about ourselves that we either can't or don't acknowledge.
Yes.
And that makes us susceptible. And if the cult is able to prey on those and sort of give you the things that you want, like give you this incredible archaeological find, like, yeah, we'll give you permission to look at our stuff. You know, it's like, Why would they do that unless they're mm-hmm. trying to like keep you there and like get something out of you? It's like, mm-hmm. why would you tell this woman you just met like that she deserves to have a family? It's like, because you want to give her that family and you want her to maybe join your family. So that's what I take it as. It's like they are exploiting these vulnerabilities that everybody has. Now, do I think some of the guys especially like they're a little one note? Yeah. And I think that's why when they say like, oh, it's more of a dark comedy. I think like, if you're in Sweden, you're laughing your ass off that these Americans are fucking just like eating cubes and not even acknowledging it, you know?
I could see that now.
Yeah.
Like we're still not going to get it, but like I could see that intention. Yes.
This is just my opinion, but that's what I think is going on. Because yes, mm-hmm. in reality, every single one of us, us included and the listeners, we'd be running through those woods to get out of there. Like, there's no question that this is a cult. Mm-mm. But I guess in the same way with, like, Rosemary's Baby, where it's like, you know something is wrong, but because you have these other things going on and it makes you, like, distrust your own opinion or it makes you myopic and you don't notice these red flags, you become susceptible to this larger influence.
Yes.
And boy, are they. So Mark is led away by this young woman. And that night, he's still out. They assume he's, like, hooking up with this woman, Inga. And mm-hmm. Danny asks Josh for a sleeping pill. However, so she knocks out. And then Josh creeps out. And he breaks into, like, the religious house to look at the Ruby Rodder, the holy book, and to take some photos, which Father Odd said, you could write stuff down, but you cannot do photos. Unfortunately, he is surprised by Mark. Just kidding. It is, in fact, somebody else wearing Mark's skin. So, again, that's a feature wrap on Mark. He has been completely skinned. We've alluded to a game called Skin the Fool earlier, which they don't define, but I'm assuming that's he's the fool.
Be that.
Fool. Oh. And suddenly, Josh is hit in the head from behind, and his body is dragged away. In the morning, both Mark and Josh are missing, and Father Odd announces at breakfast that the 19th book of the Ruby Rodder has been taken from the temple. Somebody has stolen the book, so of course we immediately assume, oh, it must be Josh.
Yes.
And he says nobody wants to point any fingers, but where are Josh and Mark? Because they're both gone. And Christian, because he's so desperate to like get the Hargo like to buy in on his thesis, and he's again an asshole, is like, we don't know anything about this. And I don't think Mark would do this, but Josh is the type to do something like this. Like immediately throws him under the bus.
Academic competition is ruthless.
Yeah. And the elders say, okay, we're going to find them. Odd and Pele are going to look for Josh and Mark. Danny, you're going to join the women because it's like sort of the last day of the festival. You're going to join them for the women's activities. And Christian, would you go see Siv in her house? And Allison, the question to you then is, who will survive?
Who will survive?
I this is more what I hope. I hope that the American men all die. And that Danny lives.
Okay.
That is my guess because that's like what I want for her since they're mm-hmm. all kind of terrible.
Well, I got good news coming up for you.
Oh, great.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
So Danny joins the women and they all have a glass of flower punch, which is a hallucinogenic tea. And she said, what's this for? And they go, for the competition.
Oh, no.
And they all the women, Danny's now in white and she also has a flower headdress like the other women. They hold hands in a spiral around that cross-like structure.
The maypole-y thing, yeah.
And as the tea starts to take hold, she sees her feet are becoming grass. She's becoming part of nature. And she starts to freak out because, you know, again, that's a lot.
Yes, because that's super fucking scary.
And an elder named Irma explains in Swedish the sort of why they dance. It says, it was here long, long ago that the black one lured the youths of Harga to the grass and seduced them to dance. Once they began, they could not stop, and they danced themselves to death. Now, in life-holding defiance of the black one, we dance until we fall, and she who survives will be crowned for her stamina. Mm. And then they dance. And they're dancing in a circle, like, all around the pole over and over again. And every time the elder screams, stop, they stop. But if you fall down, if you're sort of jolted, you fall down. And also, everyone's tripping. Then you're out.
Right.
So then they are just...
Not the most stable of dance moves.
Yeah.
You're hallucinating.
Exactly. But everyone's, like, laughing and having fun. Even the people who fall down first are, like, having a great time, you know, like, falling all over. Meanwhile, Christian goes into Siv's house. There's this very cool little, like, tiny house that has, like, these white background with dark blue sort of, like, ornate illustrations that are, like, very occult and, like, but, like, still Swedish.
Pretty, yeah.
It looks very cool. And he sits with Siv, and he immediately assumes it's about the Josh and the Ruby Rod are being stolen. He's like, Josh sucks. You know, he throws him under the bus. And Siv says, well, how do you feel about Maya? And Christian's like, oh, she seems great. And Siv informs him that you have been approved to mate with Maya. And he says, oh, yeah, I think I ate one of her pubic hairs. And Siv says, sounds probably right, which I thought was fun.
So he knew?
He is putting it together, finally.
I see. Okay.
And then you see him leave the house.
Does he seem upset about that?
Unfazed, Allison.
Okay.
Unfazed. And this, of course, will be his downfall. If you're okay with eating pubes, you will not escape a horror movie. I'm sorry.
No.
And I'm
not talking
about getting a pube in your mouth. It's happened to the best of us.
No.
I'm saying consuming is part of a meal.
and unknowingly at the time.
Yes. If that's not a red flag to you, baby.
I don't know what is.
You're going to be spending a lot of time, the rest of your life in Sweden, for the most part. And so Christian, he leaves the house. We don't see him. Like, does he agree to it or whatever? And Christian joins the villagers who are all watching the women dance. And he takes a glass of the hallucinogenic tea. And he said, what is this for again? And the woman tells him, it's supposed to break down your defenses and open you up to the influence. Which to me is not a reason to drink it, but would be a reason not to drink it.
Not to drink it.
And he's reluctant, but then he sees Maya, like, looking at him. And he says, fuck it. And the women dance in a circle. And they hold hands. Until there's one woman left standing, and it's Dani, and she's crowned the May Queen. And everyone's cheering for her, and they take a photo of her with the village, and they give her, like, a big flower headdress and, like, epaulettes. And she's freaking out, like, she's still tripping. And as the villagers all rush over to her to, like, congratulate her, she sees her mother also in the tunic.
Oh, no.
Walk by and touch her shoulder, but then she turns to her, and she's already gone. So she's, like, hallucinating her family.
Okay.
And Danny's totally out of it to the point where Pele grabs Danny's face and kisses her. And so Danny's like, wait, what's going on now? And they have her step on a platform. And they carry her singing to the village. And in the foliage behind her, we see sort of the ghostly image of her sister's face with the carbon monoxide hose taped to her mouth.
Oh, God.
In the trees. Again, she's hallucinating. We are seeing it. She's seeing it, you know. Okay. And they all get to the, again, a big long table. This table budget on this film must have been out of control.
Tables.
Gorgeous tables.
I mean, love that. Love a tablescape.
And so she stands at the head of the table. Now she's sort of in charge. So, like, when she sits, everyone sits. When she picks up her silverware, everyone picks up their silverware. And they're all cheering her, and they try to make her eat a herring whole, which she fails to do, but they all celebrate anyways. And they tell her, you're part of the family, yes? Meanwhile, Christian's having a really bad trip. And he asks the man next to him, like, what's going on? The guy claps in Christian's face, which sort of causes the air to ripple and sort of like a wave to hit Christian's face because he's tripping. And he's like, that's not cool. Mm-mm. And he's perturbed, but he is not so perturbed that he doesn't sneak away with Maya to the mating shack, or the mating house. God. And Dani can't really do anything about it because she's being taken away in a carriage drawn by some of the women to go bless the crops and the livestock. And they do a ritual where they put like a bunch of meat in a hole and grain in a hole and egg in a hole. And then Dani has to walk on it with a torch in a circle. You know, pagan stuff.
Standard cult activities. Yeah.
And so meanwhile, Christian, who's still stripping balls, puts on a mating frock and goes to the mating house. And the elder men have him inhale a steam for his vitality. Yeah. And I guess it's to counteract how absolutely stoned he is. So he goes in and Maya is waiting totally nude on a bed of flowers. However, she's surrounded by a semicircle of other women from the village, also completely nude. They're all like adult women, but like of all ages, sort of holding hands, watching them have sex. And so they have sex. And Maya doesn't look like she's loving it because I'm assuming it's her first time. So she reaches back to the fellow townswomen and they all take her hand and one of them sings right next to Christian's face. And then the singer starts vocalizing like sex noises and then Maya and the other women start to echo it. Meanwhile, Christian is still going for it. Also,
that's insane. Like,
I don't know. I just don't know. He looks horrified. Like this thing is, it's not like he's into it. He also is shocked and like stunned, but
just
he's still
like going through the motions almost. Or?
So I think at this point, like I guess he says like two. He's drugged. So I think this is. Right. I do feel while Christian is an asshole, he is being repeatedly drugged and forced mm-hmm. into this on some level. Mm-hmm. Yes, did he choose to do this? Sure, but I just feel like once they're giving you vitality steam and hallucinogenic juice, I don't even mean things start to.
Yeah, there's a lot at play.
And unfortunately, that is also a big cult thing. Like a lot of cults, mm-hmm. like sort of yeah. ply you with drugs and sort of make yeah. you more vulnerable. Drinking, and yeah, so I think that's also what we're supposed to say. Also, poor Ruben has to watch. He's laying in a cot in the corner, and he has to watch all this go down.
Oh, God,
I know Ruben's probably my favorite character, and I just feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
So when Danny arrives back in town, he could hear all the women moaning from the mating house, and he runs over there before the other one can stop her, and she sees Christian. And she runs back outside and she vomits, and the women all take her to the dorm barn. And when she screams, all of the women scream with her. Like they're echoing back her pain. And back in the mating shed, Chris doesn't know that Danny saw him, so he's still going for it. And a nude elderly woman comes and starts like pushing Christian's butt, I guess, to like make it go faster. But as soon as he's finished, he realizes he goofed up, and he runs nude out of the mating house. And he immediately discovers Josh's severed leg just sticking upright in a garden.
No.
And terrified, he runs into a nearby chicken coop. And inside he finds Simon has been flayed open. Ugh. And his lungs have been pulled back through his back. But he's still alive. And he's suspended from the ceiling. But his legs are lungs are still inflating. This isn't real. You would die.
Right. Yeah, obviously. I guess. Okay, so he's hallucinating this.
Yes, I think that Simon has really been flayed and killed, but the fact that he's breathing—
But he's not still alive.
I don't think so.
I don't think you could be.
Well, so I looked it up, and on Wikipedia, it's called a blood eagle, and it's a ritual method of execution detailed in late Skaldic poetry. Okay. And I guess it's supposed to be like a Old Norse punishment where, the victims, in both cases, it's mentioned in the sagas twice— In both cases, members of royal families were killed with the blood eagle. They're placed in a prone position, their ribs severed from the spine with a sharp tool, and their lungs pulled through the opening to create a pair of wings. There is continuing debate about whether the rite was a literary invention, a mistranslation of the original text, or an authentic historic practice, much like we were saying about the Atestupa,
yeah, right.
and the Wicker Man. Yes. Did this actually happen, or was this something like, and then this happened and
conjured up by the brains of people that were living back then in the same way that we make up these movies now.
But in this movie, unfortunately, it is very real. Mm. And before Christian can escape, because now Christian's like, okay, now I see what's going on here. The elders arrive and they blow a powder in his face to paralyze him. And he hits the floor. When he wakes up.
They have so many like
powders and
things,
potions.
Powders and potions and teas and...
When he wakes up, Christian is still paralyzed, and an elder is explaining to everyone that...
As an offering to our Father, we will today surrender 9 human lives.
So we have the 4 foreigners who have already been killed. So Mark, Josh, Connie, and Simon. Uh-huh. And then we have the 2 elderly people. Mm-hmm. And then there are 2 volunteers from the town, including Ingmar, Pele's brother.
Oh,
he volunteered, and another young man also that we saw earlier also volunteers. And so they need 1 more, and the May Queen has to pick. It's either Christian, or they use like a bingo machine to pull somebody's name out, or some other random guy.
Random person.
Yeah, like Torbjorn or whatever. And she, of course, picks Christian because she is just... I guess it's like all of this like bitterness towards him is coming out, and the cult is almost sort of like rationalizing why it's okay for him to die. Yeah. That's what I took it as.
Yeah, because, that seems like the most likely explanation.
I just want to say that the deity that they mention referring to, or the person they're sort of like offering this up to, his name, Ymir, Y-M-I-R, in Norse mythology, is an ancestor of all Jotnar. Why did I think that I could...
What?
And all Jotnar, okay, those are all a bunch of, like, non-human entities, like dwarves and elves. I believe the creature in the ritual was a Jotnar.
Oh, yes. That's... Yes.
So I think it's, like, a primeval, like, being that's a hermaphrodite. So Ymir is both male and female. Yes. They can gives birth to male and female entities from his armpits.
Oh,
so I
that
think,
sounds honestly better than the system we've got now. So
I mean, yeah, I mean that's pretty cool. And then apparently he drinks from they drink from a primeval cow. You know, so there's a lot going on. He's got a lot of, they got a lot of brothers,
a lot of stuff,
you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess that's who we're offering this offering up to.
The sacrifice to. Okay.
Yeah. And so, of course, Danny picks Christian, and all of them are then brought to the sacred yellow temple. So we see Connie's body go in. We see Mark's hollowed out skin with a jester's cap on because he was the fool they skinned. Yes. And then Josh and Simon and the cliff jumpers' bodies. And then finally, we see them butcher the bear, and they put a still paralyzed Christian inside of its skin before putting him in the temple. So he's alive and paralyzed. And then we see the two volunteers, Ingmar and Ulf, and they are given something from the yew tree. And basically, they're like, given it, it's like, you won't feel pain and you won't feel fear when you're being killed, basically.
I hope that exists.
And an elder tells Christian and the two guys and all the bodies, you know, with you, we purge our most unholy affects. We banish you to the deepest recesses that you might reflect on your wickedness. And they set the temple on fire. And unfortunately, despite taking that yew tree potion, even the village volunteers scream as they are burned alive.
Of course.
Christian can't even
scream.
Nothing
is going to overcome the fear and pain of burning alive.
Yeah. And the rest of the village is outside, and they scream and they writhe and they jerk around in sympathy with them being burned alive. And Danny, who is wailing, and she's wearing like a gigantic floral frock. It looks like it's like a flower bell. It's the size of her body and has like huge flower crown, and she could barely move in it, and she's choking on the smoke and screaming. But finally, as she watches the melee, as she watches the temple completely burn down to nothing, something happens to Danny, and as she looks over the fire, she smiles. And that's the end.
So, like, it worked?
Well, that's a great question, because what was it supposed to do? And if the answer, I guess it's like, was this supposed to get her to join the cult? Because if so, then it worked.
Right.
Is that what you meant?
Is she just a part? Are we to believe that, like, moving forward, she's there and a part of it?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
And I think it's because it was like, okay, so this is my family died, and they've taken advantage of my vulnerability. This is my family. So what are some fatal mistakes, you think? You could even think of one from this movie that people made.
Fatal mistakes.
I would say going to Sweden for this at all. Inviting Danny going, all of them trying to take advantage of this cultural event for their own academic pursuits selfishly.
Yeah,
it's. I would say this movie, unlike others, where it feels that there was nothing people could have done, and fate is in control of their narratives. There were a lot of mistakes all the way through this.
I agree. People were biffing ideas
Non-stop.
Left and right.
Stop.
I mean, like, I'm someone where, like, if I'm in a bad mood, I'll leave a party. You know, if I saw two elderly people murdered, essentially,
I'm leaving.
I'm out of there. If I see an old man's head gets crushed by a mallet, I'm not sticking around for lunch.
No. Honestly, if I'm, like, depressed and recovering from something, I'm not getting on a transatlantic flight.
Oh, exactly. Right. Like, I got to sit there?
To go be in a place that's, like, uncomfortable. Like, I'm like, okay, am I going to a luxury resort where I can, like, mentally check out for a few days?
And for 9 days. I don't want to do anything for 9 days.
I don't want to do anything for 9 days.
And then I had a segment that I think sort of ties in this conversation. The segment title is, what would a cult have to offer you? And to me, it's like, okay, they offered Danny family. They offered Josh and Christian, like, a way to be like, oh, I'm discovering something.
Success. Yeah.
What would a cult have to offer you for you to put up with even a tenth of this bullshit?
There is nothing that they could, but, like, I just do think the promise of a quick and painless death is one that I am always hoping for.
Okay. Interesting, like, choice.
Down the road.
Okay, like, yeah.
If there could be a promise of, like, hey, when it's your time to die, like, we will make sure that you are comfortable and it happens very quickly and there is nothing, there is not long suffering. That is, like, my one of my greatest fears in life is long suffering at death. But something more immediate, a lot of money.
I know, that's what I'm thinking too. And I'm like, I don't really, it's not that I don't want community. I don't want this kind of community.
No.
You know what I mean?
But also, like, what would money even accomplish in that? Like, if it is to stay in this environment, like,
right, you have the nicest frock,
meaningless.
You have the biggest hut.
Right. Yeah. You know, yeah, you drink the least menstrual blood. Like,
you only have to drink your own menstrual blood. Okay, and here's another thing.
Okay.
As we discuss this, if that's her menstrual blood, her likelihood of getting pregnant, if she's
currently on her period,
is not high. So then the question is that weeks old menstrual blood that she
was hiding?
I was
going to say, is it saved up from previous?
It must be, because you don't see her take it out, or you don't see her collecting it. So that means that period blood must be at least a number of weeks old, so that now she's ovulating.
You would think that they would understand the fertility cycle to know, like, oh, this is when, if she wants to get pregnant, like, it has to be timed out in a certain, like, they seem to have pre-thought everything else. I'm sure that that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yuck.
I guess, like, what the cult offers is you never have to question your life ever again, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, like, meaning.
Yeah. That's true.
But I just don't feel like I'm that kind of person. Like, I just think, like, even if I found something like, this is the meaning, I think it's, like, I still would have a lot of doubts or, like, consider it. The idea of, like, being offered, like, a blissful, peaceful mindset, I understand is, like, why people like a cult, but it's not for me, you know?
Well, I couldn't be blissed out and peaceful if I'm not in, like, a comfortable apartment that has Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I need air conditioning. I need Wi-Fi, television.
Yeah.
I guess they were watching Austin Powers, so they have DVDs
something.
At least. Yeah, I'm sorry. And if I see one pube intentionally put into food, there's nothing the cult could offer me.
I'm out.
And then finally, we always like to have Allison and also me rate our movies on the spooky scale. Allison, where do you think Midsommar falls on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I would say that, like, similar to Hereditary, this did have, like, a sense of, like, just kind of, like, ongoing, an unsettling feeling, which I always find they're kind of, even though there's not always a lot of stuff happening, like, you're never not, like, her trauma colors the entire, like, I'm hearing about it, never not thinking of that. And that's super upsetting. So, like, I'd give this a 6.
Yeah. I'm going to give this a 4. I just feel like, again, I don't want to be like I'm so down on this movie, but I just feel like, and we've discussed this before, like, if I can't see myself understanding, like, what's going on, or I'm like, at least like Hereditary, I'm like, okay, yeah, grief. I feel like it did a good job of making me like, I guess I can understand how you get there. This, from the jump, I'm like, leave. And then we see characters leave, and granted, they're punished and killed, and Simon and Connie never get to leave. But it just felt like, you know, like, you wanted them to be a little more self-aware, a little smarter, a little like, okay, something's going on. And as a result, it just wasn't as scary to me, personally.
Right.
Personally.
Well, we did it.
We did it.
Midsommar.
Well, we hope you enjoyed it, everyone.
Yes.
Praise be to Ymir, or however you pronounce that deity's name. And yeah, as always, you can send us movie suggestions at ruined@theradiopoint.com. We love to hear from you.
Love to.
And you can follow us on social media at Ruined Podcast, or follow us individually at our names.
Yes.
And
and rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes, please do.
Those things mean a lot to us. You know, it's a lot easier than, you know, human sacrifices, which I think is the alternative for how to find success in podcasting. So
yes,
please do those things. And more than anything else, I guess what we really need you to do is
keep it spooky.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey,
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.